All right.
All right.
Are we ready?
Let's do it.
I'll try not to blow anyone's ears out this time.
Hello and welcome.
Thank you.
To the Sprock Podcast, where we simplify the good life. My name is Brock Dittus.
And I'm Aaron Flores, broadcasting from the People's Republic of Portland, nestled in the heart of Cascadia.
We are the show that brings you somewhat irreverent conversations about the intricacies of thinking locally with a global perspective and enjoying the best that life has to offer, including this bottle of tea that I brought in.
Like I was just like, crack,
40
crack,
ounces.
Crack. Covering bicycling, trains, transit, and simpler living, and today, appropriate technology.
That's right. Appropriate techno. What is appropriate for technology? What is not?
Well,
how much technology do you want in your pocket?
I think we will be finding out.
That's right. Yeah. we are here in the room with Brad Davis.
Hello.
And Brad, you were here. This is the first time you and I have been in the studio together.
Mm-hmm.
Because the last time you were in the studio, I was not in the studio and I was in pain. So it's good to see you
right,
in person.
And it's good to have you not in
pain.
Oh,
shit.
Yeah, I know. Yes. That's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, yeah. I mean, I'm sorry, I didn't recognize you.
Well, without the dreads.
Right.
To be fair, you got a haircut. Yeah. Well, that was the thing, because I met you at VeloCult, what, 3 months back now? How long has it been?
It's been a little while.
Yeah. Okay, a little while. And as I recall, I had seen your photograph from when you came into the studio. And then I met you at VeloCult, and I was like, wait, this doesn't look like the guy who came into the studio, whose picture I saw. I didn't meet him in person, so. And now you look like you have even less hair than when I met you at VeloCult. So we were positing, I think, you, Ruben Doimling, you're welcome back to the studio.
Thank you.
Like, we were positing that your hair was actually retracting back into your head.
Right. You know, maybe I've hit the point now where my hair just keeps getting shorter.
You're going through the change.
Actually, I'm questioning the appropriateness of hair clippers as technology.
Well, the only way to go out is to go in, I guess. you have to plumb the depths of hair clipping to find out exactly how much hair you need.
Right. I mean, it's an experiential experiment.
So. We respect that. So, yeah, in just a couple of minutes, we're going to talk about, Brad, you and I were talking about, like, how much phone do you need in your pocket?
Mm-hmm.
And we had an interesting, like, brief conversation about that as you were leaving because you were writing something down on a notepad. And I said, I like that. I wish I did more of that. So, that's a thing. And, Ruben, we talked with you a little bit about, I think, not being super hyper-connected.
That is correct. Yeah. I do not own a cell phone.
Right. And you brought a flashlight with you instead.
I did, yes. Sometimes I need something to make me feel included.
Excellent.
Well, everybody else is Instagramming.
Yes.
You got wires.
Yeah.
Back
when the water bottles were shaped like cell phones, that was my period.
Oh,
you
wait.
You impressed people with a cell phone-like device that wasn't a cell phone.
Ooh. Except
this
you were
20 years ago.
Okay. And I was not aware of this. Was it like the size, like the brick-sized phones?
I think so.
Okay, shaped and like that, but it was
you
full.
Could get something that looked like a phone, but obviously cost less because it was a water bottle or something else. But
right.
it could impress people visually.
Okay,
even right. if you couldn't do anything with it.
Gotcha.
So okay. I got stuck back there. I'd still try to impress people, but I don't have a phone.
Okay. Do you still have that phone bottle?
No, I never actually had that.
Oh, phone. Okay. Now I'm curious. I kind of want to find one.
That would be cool.
I'd like to.
Is that guy a doctor or a drug dealer?
Right. Exactly. I would like to get a razor, like one of those like thin razor phones,
yeah,
and hollow it out and make a flask out of it, because it wouldn't be big enough to actually hold like enough water to slake your thirst,
right?
Nor enough beer, yeah. But you could put some whiskey in there.
Yeah, you'd have to have something pretty strong for it to like have any effect.
That's my idea. Yeah. Speaking of which, it's sober September.
Yeah.
I'm drinking a shitload of tea right now. This is
I like how
fact.
you have a tea, but like it's tea, but it's still like in this 40-ounce bottle.
Actually,
like you find a Mickey's or
yeah,
something.
It's 33.8 fluid ounces.
Oh.
Yeah. So not quite a 40. But yeah. So you know what I'm looking forward to when Sober September is over in like 3 days?
Heading over
days?
To the beer mongers.
That's right. I'm going to go to the beer mongers and I'm going to have myself a drink.
Right on.
Yeah. We were over there tonight, and Andrew, the friendly Monday night bartender, said, hey, there is, in fact, a thing called Chris Fest coming up.
Oh, that's right.
Chris Fest is, well, it's a beer festival, I guess. They have a bunch of beers, but it's all featuring either brewers named Chris or breweries with people named Chris at them, or beer reviewers named Chris who say, hey, I would like to see this on tap. So that's happening at the Beer Mongers. It's October 20th.
That's when you know you're in the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah.
When you can actually have enough Chris's to put together a...
Are there enough enough people brewing their own beer where you can just sort them by name?
Totally, yeah. So apparently in years previous, there have been Sean Fest and Ben Fest. Those are the other two that I heard.
Okay.
And possibly others. But so there are at least, this is at least the third, if not more, of this name festival. So Beer Mongers, October 20th, that's coming up. We recommend people join.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll be there.
It'd be fun.
I got to look at my calendar. I haven't looked at my calendar yet.
You don't have to be named Chris to be there.
Right, right. Mm. You have to be named Chris if you want your beer featured there.
Right.
Yeah. All right. So anyways, thank you, Beer Mongers. What are we drinking for the Beer Mongers?
I've got myself another Victorian lemonade.
Oh, yeah.
I need something tart.
Fentimans is, that's a classy soda.
It is. So here's the thing with Fentimans is they really do the whole, like, strong flavor.
Yeah.
Like, they do that right up.
Yeah.
None of their drinks are, like, something you just slam down.
Totally.
You have to sip at it.
Yeah. Was that ginger beer, the alcoholic ginger beer, was that a Fentimans product? Or was that somebody else? I forget now.
No, they do it.
Okay.
Yeah, they do
We had
an alcoholic ginger beer. That's right.
I didn't get that tonight.
You did not.
For obvious reasons. Yeah. What do we have over here?
Handcrafted root beer by Steelhead.
Yeah. That is like one of the... It's sweet, but it's not like sickly sweet, you know? It's like the sweet... It's the best sweet I've ever had in a root beer.
I didn't think I liked root beer, but last time I had it, and I still like it.
you came back for more.
I did.
Yeah. And Brad, what do you have?
So I'm taking it. These are all from the Beer Mongers.
These are all from the Beer Mongers.
I've never been over there. Those sound like some pretty cool folks over there.
Oh, you should go. They're the coolest.
Yeah, it's a Paddle Trail Ale Session IPA from Sierra Nevada.
Yeah. This is a collaboration, I believe, with Crux.
Yeah.
So that's two.
Both brewer owned and operated.
Yeah. Wait, Crux is. That's right. You know what I found out?
It sounds kind of like Chris.
Who's the? Yes. I wonder if they qualify.
They will be featured.
No, misspelled, Chris.
In Hood River, what's it, Full Sail Brewing? They used to be worker-owned and operated.
They're not anymore.
They were sold.
Whoa.
I wonder who sold them. I mean, if they were worker-owned and operated, they had to have sold themselves out.
Right?
Yeah, I don't know, but I'm bummed because I used to buy their product because it was worker-owned, but now I'm forced to do something else.
Mm.
Oh, well.
Well, now you'll buy from Crux.
I guess, yeah. Okay, except they're more expensive.
Oh, right.
They're
further away.
They're of higher quality.
And from further away.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. I'll be drinking Eastern Oregon's water instead.
Hey, speaking of alcohol that has traveled far and wide.
Yeah.
I got a message from my little brother in Hawaii.
Oh, yeah. Tell me about this.
It's a little video of them at some fancy awards dinner thing. It must be some... bartending awards like dinner that they were having.
Okay.
And apparently he won a second for best cocktail, or
Ooh.
His bar won
nice.
Second for best cocktail.
Nice.
Therefore he won because he's director of beverage over there.
You said not a mixologist.
Not a mixologist.
Director of beverage.
That's the title that he is using.
There we go.
I don't know what the differences are. But the reason why I mention this is because in their cocktails they use aviation Portland gin.
That's a Portland gin, yeah.
Mm, yes.
Yeah. Taste of elderberries.
So if you happen to be somewhere in Oahu, I do believe it's either Waikiki or...
Are you sure it's Oahu?
I know it's Oahu.
Okay.
Yeah, I know the island. I'm just not sure if it's in Waikiki or Honolulu proper. But anyways, look up 12th Avenue or 12th Street Tavern. He's going to correct me on this anyways.
Oh, that's cool.
So anyways, look him up. It's a real classy bar.
Nice.
Yeah, they use our gin.
Good for them. There we go.
Award-winning cocktails over there.
Wait, it's not elderberries. It's like spruce.
Juniper.
Or something. Juniper, that's
juniper.
Right. Okay. Yeah. The nice taste of juniper.
Yes.
Yeah. Mixed by Ben.
Mixed by my little brother.
Yeah.
Well, directed by my little brother. Mixed by his lackeys.
Okay, there we go. Yeah.
Choreographed.
Right. Yeah.
There you go.
Exactly. So it could be done again and again with the same like flipping motion of the bottle. And
that's
everything.
Right.
Yeah. So this weekend we did Bike Scout.
That's right.
This is the first time I've done a bike thing with you in some time.
It's been too long.
Yeah. I'm glad it worked out this time around.
Yeah.
How do you feel after Bike Scout?
Well, first off, I should mention that it wouldn't have worked out if Anna hadn't already paid for our registration and like registered us ahead of time.
I was going to ask about that. Do I owe you money?
Nobody owes anybody money.
Well, should I pay you something?
Not me. No.
Okay, so Anna paid for our team.
She registered our team because she felt very strongly that we needed to compete. And
there we go.
I was being lazy and was like, we've only got a day left. I'm just not going to do it.
There's only 24 hours.
Yep. I was already in bed.
Okay. Well, it was nice of her to do that because we had a good time.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah. It was great. I'm kind of paying for it.
Right, because you had a significant incident.
I had a good wipeout as we were taking a sharp turn into one of the alleys in Lad's Edition. And just the bike, you know, took it too sharp. And braked a little too hard and the bike just slid out from underneath me and like landed on the side. I got some nice road rash.
You do have road rash on your arm.
Yeah.
That's a badge of honor.
Yeah. So I jumped right back up. I don't know like what it was for you guys watching, but I like in my head was like, I got to get back up. I got to like make sure this doesn't look too bad. You know?
Yeah.
It's like team morale. Got to keep it up.
Well, that's the thing. I was looking at you. I was like, wait, how bad is this?
Honestly, like, I wasn't feeling too bad towards the end where we were, like, searching around Alameda, and we were, like, climbing up that ridge.
Right.
The second time going up that ridge, I was
feeling terrible.
That's fine.
It was a big ridge.
How big is the course?
Big as you want it to be.
Yeah, so we should explain for people who aren't familiar with Bike Scout. It's basically you get a manifest. It's kind of like an alley cat, except it's probably a longer day. And maybe less intense.
Not as many rules broken.
Yeah, exactly. They encourage you to be good to the people around you. Well, I mean, not to besmirch alley cats. I'm sure they do as well. But
I think this was a reputation.
This was a more relaxed event. We started out at a brewery, and they give you a manifest of a couple of different like scavenger hunt types of things. So you go and like find something. You go and take pictures of stuff. You go do things. And the whole thing ends up at VeloCult, where they award you points for all the things that you did, however many you were able to accomplish from your particular list of things that you had to get. And one of those for us was going up this steep hill and finding a food cart.
Yes.
Nice.
As well as a mural that, apparently...
That nobody found.
Apparently the mural exists, but yeah, we shouldn't feel too bad for not finding it, because no one else found it either.
Yeah.
Yeah. The internet is wrong, by the way.
The internet is very wrong.
So we know.
Yes.
But so you fell down, and I thought you were just kind of like, you know, having fun with your bike like you do.
Well, because, okay, so...
You like to skid your tires.
Up until that point, yeah, every time I took especially a right turn, I would try to take it, like, pretty sharp and leaning, and if I could, like, swing the back tire around.
Right.
And I won't say I wasn't doing that.
But you weren't doing it to the extent that you did.
I wasn't planning on, doing it that bad.
Yeah.
And today has been the worst, actually, as far as pain. I'm really seriously wondering if there are cracked ribs.
Okay, so you haven't had diagnosed cracked ribs, but you're curious about it.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I mean, there's really no point in going to a doctor for cracked or broken ribs unless, you know, I've punctured a lung, which... I'm certain I haven't done that.
Okay, that's good. That's good.
Because all they'll do is just say, like, yeah, in a few weeks it'll heal itself, and here's something for the pain.
Okay. And you could get something for the pain.
Well, yeah. Ibuprofen's strong enough for me.
Okay. Yeah. This is why I like you. You don't do the hard stuff.
Well, yeah. No, I've taken Vicodin, like, once in my entire life, and I'll never do it again.
Okay.
It's terrible.
Gotcha. It's been quite some time since I had Vicodin.
Really?
Yeah.
But anyhow, like, despite all that, it was a lot of fun. I promised that I was playing for fun this year and not to win.
Right, right.
And I think I did a pretty good job of it up until they started announcing the winners. And then, like...
And they're just, like, throwing your hat on the ground.
The, you know, like, hey, for best costume, you know, this guy. And I'm like, oh, come on. Like, best team theme, these people.
Well, I think that the difficulty with that was that the best theme was the Mormon polygamist, right?
Well, and they got it. You know,
they did get it.
I will
Because we were dressed up as punk rock Mormon missionaries.
There's no reason for us to get it over them other than my own personal, like, jealousy.
How about dedication? And, multiple years in a row.
There you go. If there was a category for that.
Yeah. Maybe there will be someday if we just keep on doing it.
And I said something that was really, I regret saying at the time.
You want to say it again?
I will.
Okay.
But I still regret saying this, but I think it underlines like sort of that humanness, that underlying jealousy, that competition tends to bring out in people. And like when they announced, I think it was the second place people and seeing them and that they were like, a bit older than I was, and I think I pulled Adele aside and I said something to the effect of like, look, there's no way these people could outbike us, so it's got to be in our route planning.
Oh. I remember that. Like,
yeah, and
because they're old,
right?
Yeah, obviously see, older people can't ride.
Right. Not as fast as me, you know. And yeah, I still regret saying that.
Well, you know, that's why we have a public platform for you to apologize.
But yes, yeah, so I apologize to that team.
That's cool. They forgive you.
Sure. But in the meantime, like I bring it because it's I think a great example of like sort of that other side of competition. There's friendly competition, and then there's that like ugly side of it.
I swear. So Armando, or Dude Luna, as some people know him on Twitter, he had been messing with us earlier about like how many people needed to be in the photo. It's like, it's cool. You just need two people. And in fact, you have to have your entire team in almost every photo.
Right.
And so at the end of the night, he's like, hey, I need you to like work out the sound system. And I immediately responded with suspicion. I'm like, why the hell do you need me to do the sound system?
Are you screwing with us again?
No, I'm not doing it. And he's like, no, man, seriously. Like, nobody that works here right now knows how to work the sound system. And so I was ashamed. I apologized to him, and he forgave me. So apologize, somebody. Apologize.
Yes.
Everyone apologize.
It's one thing
it'll
to do wrong
good.
By somebody. It's another thing to just do wrong and not be apologetic about it.
Yeah, so you and I both dealt with our own versions of letting the competition get to the best of us. Yeah, but all said and done. Thank you, Aileen. Thank you, Matt. And who else was working on that? All the judges and everything. And Otis, the dog.
Oh, Lisa Luna.
And Lisa Luna,
first year as whatever guest director.
Yeah, guest scout master, I think, or something like that. So
also, she gave me antiseptic cream for my shoulder.
Which is good, because you tore it up.
Because,
So, yeah, everybody that put that thing together did a great job. It was a fun event.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah. And then we danced. Or I danced.
There was some dancing involved.
There was something about, the soundtrack was particularly...
I'm not going to publicly admit to dancing.
Of course not. Of course not. No one would ever suspect that you danced.
Nope.
But I did.
There was... now that we're talking about dancing, there was that point during the competition where we were like on the street, we're waiting for the light to turn. There was a car in front of us. I had music going on my little system.
Right.
And I was just getting so antsy that like I started dancing on my bike because I had to put that energy somewhere.
Yes. There you go. Nice.
And then the people in the car in front of us, because they were in a convertible, they could see everything and they started dancing along with
us. Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah. And then they turned around like as they were pulling away and said, kind of Mormon, right?
Oh, really? They said that?
I think so. Is that the red convertible
exactly
from California?
How exactly do you pull off a punk rock Mormon?
You rip the sleeves off the shirt.
Oh, so you have like the button up.
Yeah, you got the tie.
Yep, we had the signs. We had
the nameplates. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome.
But just no sleeves.
Right.
Yeah. So.
And were you carrying Bibles or versions
Books
of
Mormon?
No, we weren't. No. We should have, though, right?
We could have.
Yeah.
Sounds like it worked without them.
They're easy to get. Yeah. someday we'll Goodwill some Books of Mormon.
I liked how the polygamist team had a bunch of like little baby dolls that they carried around with them. It was one guy. Well, it was one guy and three women.
Yep.
And
for polygamists, that's like, just getting started.
Yeah, they were all like very conservatively dressed. The women were all in long dresses. And then anytime they got off the bike, they had like all these dolls the women were carrying with them.
Yeah. That was good. I think they did so, very well.
Yeah, I think great commitment to the part.
Definitely. And that was the first time I'd worn the full getup in some time. I think I wore it for the Music and Bikes ride sometime in May.
Oh, yeah.
Or something like that. But, yeah.
Because usually you wear the tiger suit for Music and Bikes.
You know, I've only done two of them so far.
Okay.
So the next one I should be DB Cooper again.
There you go.
Yeah, but we'll see. So anyways, that was Bike Scout. It was a good time. Well, let's talk about technology.
Let's talk.
So, Brad, first off, you should remind me, refresh my memory of kind of how this went down. Because you were writing something that you were writing a Twitter handle in your notebook.
Right. Yeah. So I was putting some cell phone stuff in there, and I had the phone in my pocket.
Cell phone stuff like information?
Well, like Facebook and Twitter and that other thing.
Yeah. Stuff you would normally do on a smartphone.
A person would normally do on their smartphone, but I very much underutilize my phone, and I'm a ways into it now, maybe a year, something like that, and I still underutilize my cell phone.
Okay,
and I'm okay with that, but it definitely attracted your attention,
right?
And so we started talking about technology, and I think kind of like, you know, how much do the tools we use in our lives affect our lives?
Sure. Yeah. So you, how long have you carried a notepad for?
All the time.
Ever since you could write?
Well, I remember one time traveling on the East Coast, and I was thinking, man, I could have my thoughts so much more together if I was carrying a notebook.
There we go.
And so ever since.
Nice. So it's just like random notes, or do you have like a system how you use the notebook?
I try to fill up the pages.
Okay.
That's my system.
Nice.
So, like, I got, sometimes I'll have, like, a couple inches worth of space, and I'll put my note into that space just so I can fill up the pages before I turn it.
Yeah. There you go. Are you a doodler?
No.
Oh, okay. Just
no,
words.
I should be.
That's up to you. I mean, you know, I'm not saying you should. It's up to you. You really can do what you want to.
Well, if you're, like, on the phone in a conversation and you just kind of, like, you were taking notes, but, you know, whatever, and you're just talking, maybe, but.
Right. Okay, yeah. So how has that worked? I'm curious because not just got a smartphone, but like you're pretty
recent
shallow.
Enough. I feel like I kind of came out of the left field with the whole smartphone technology thing.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't grow up with the internet. I actually didn't have it for a long time, past when most people had it.
And yeah.
I kind of jumped into it all at once. It was a little bit of a surprise and shock to me how much technology had taken hold in our everybody's daily lives,
right?
You know? And to the point where everybody's walking around with the internet in their pocket and they know how to use it. I'm like, to surf a YouTube video, I don't even.
It's not a thing you do often.
It's not something that it was like around me that I assimilated into.
Right. How did you avoid the internet?
A little bit of a story, but. I lived outside of technology for a while just by being a street kid and living an alternative life.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you had a flip phone was the thing you had before a smartphone.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And, you know, those were cool. And,
right.
Now I have this, now that I got the expensive phone, I have this case that is supposed to be waterproof and shockproof and supposed to be able to drive over it with the car and whatnot. Because I've killed my other phones before this. I specifically remember the last one. I was out on a bike trip and along the Willamette down in Clackamas County, and I stopped for lunch. I got Burgerville, so I had this sack and all the packaging that comes with prepared food. And I'm sitting by the water, and the wind blows up and blows all my stuff into the water. And I thought, man, there's enough dirt in the Willamette already. And so I took off my shoes and hiked up my pants, and I was like trying to get it, and the wind kept blowing it further, and I just ended up getting all the way in the Willamette.
Oh, okay.
And my phone didn't survive.
Gotcha.
So I got this case and I thought, man, waterproof, this is awesome. So the first thing I did was I put it under the faucet. It's not waterproof.
Not waterproof.
Okay. Oh, no.
There we go. Well, that's kind of the weird thing, right, is that you kind of have to babysit this technology. Like it's super useful in some respect, but it's also like kind of finicky. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, it's fragile enough. Yeah.
So, Ruben, how does that compare to you also not carrying the internet in your pocket?
Well, I was intrigued and almost about to interrupt about the distinction that you all were making between, or about the smartphone being so distinct, because I was starting to think you had jumped clean from no phone to a smartphone the way you were describing that difference. But not having either, I was just listening and interested in how you observed those distinctions. But I've happily, delightedly do not have a cell phone.
Okay.
Any sort. Smart or dumb or any.
Have you ever had a cell phone? Why?
I wouldn't want one. I think for me it's a little bit like television. If I had one, I would spend way too much time on it. I'm imagining. I know that's true for television, but I don't really like when I'm around people and they're constantly distracted by these things.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the expectation that one is then also available in all these ways, 24 hours a day. And there's also I'm really a cheapskate. And I know these things cost money. And I have one that has this thing you plug in the wall and it works great. And you can hear people on it.
Right. You never lose your reception.
One thing that was sort of odd and I suppose helped me to hold out is that people have said, this is funny. You don't have a cell phone, but whenever I call, you answer. And so you're more available than people who do have cell phones.
Right.
The thing that's been particularly interesting to me about cell phones or observing how people have changed with the rise of cell phones is that, and being someone who doesn't have one and therefore sort of still looks at it from the outside a little bit, is that on a pretty broad scale, people no longer make plans and commit to them and stick with them.
Dude, that was like my first problem with cell phones, like way back in the day.
Yeah.
Was just like, it used to be back when people called each other and talked to each other voice to voice, back when that was a thing people did. That it used to be that, like, you would call someone on the phone, like I could call you, Ruben, at your house, and you would pick up at your house, and then you would write down in a notebook or something, or a calendar or a planner, like, oh yeah, I'm going to see you at this restaurant or coffee shop
at 7:30.
And then it's written in your thing and you do it.
Or you just remember it.
Right. Wait a minute. There's this thing up here that it's really smart.
if you're talented enough to have that capacity. but then like...
And there was, I think crucially, there was the expectation borne out by experience that generally people would do that.
Uh-huh.
And if they weren't there at 7:30, well, maybe they got... You know, they tripped over something and they'll be here at 7:35. But there was a bandwidth around that time arrangement where you could expect somebody would be there.
Yes. And with the rise of like being able to like get in contact with anybody at any moment, you're able to amend or cancel those plans
I'm imagining, since I don't have one, if you have one, there's in principle always the ability to endlessly and iteratively change and update your plans.
Right.
But if you don't have one, it doesn't work for me.
Right.
For everybody else, it may work, but I'm left out. And so that's probably the most annoying actual dimension of cell phone-ness to me.
So you show up at a coffee shop and somebody like tried to call you and say, oh, I had to change my plans. I can't make it because they don't value the commitments that they make to you or something like that.
As somebody who doesn't go to coffee shops, that's not so much the problem. It's more for me, being the Craigslist guy that I am, that... You know, one still would like to make arrangements, and so you would arrange to come, and nobody these days even thinks to do this. They just say, oh, just call me when you get here.
Right.
And I have to explain, I'm one of those weirdos who doesn't have a cell phone, so maybe we can just make the plan now, and I'll stick with it. I'm very punctual.
Totally.
You can trust me.
Totally. Yeah, and people are resistant to plan making these days.
Completely.
Yeah. Well, and there is just the assumption that you will be able to call. Like, I've had that. And so, Aaron, you and I should explain what we had done. I'm a guy who actually has a cell phone now. But you're still doing the...
I'm still doing the Wi-Fi
phone
over internet thing.
What's that?
So I don't even really have a phone in a manner of speaking. This is just an iPod.
Wi-Fi.
And with Wi-Fi capabilities. And so using like voice over internet programs, like Skype is one of them.
You can make a call with that.
Or Google Hangouts is another. Like I'm able to make phone calls having a cell phone plan.
Right.
However, I'm tied to like a Wi-Fi signal. I'm tied to like having to be around somewhere with Wi-Fi or with internet.
You have to go to Starbucks.
And also like the quality is greatly dependent on like the quality of the Wi-Fi or like how busy the Wi-Fi is. Like if I'm like at a McDonald's or a restaurant like that where or Starbucks is maybe a better example, where a lot of people are using the Wi-Fi all at the same time, and I'm trying to talk to somebody on the phone. The phone call gets really irritating to both of us after not very long.
Yeah,
but if you can find a clear signal, then it works just like a phone.
Yeah, it's not bad. It does what I need it to do.
So wait,
anyways,
your iPod has the internet?
Yeah, it's got Wi-Fi capabilities.
But not everywhere. Yeah. You have to be somewhere, some Wi-Fi hotspot to actually get the internet. Right. Yeah.
It's a little different story for it's kind of like looking for the callback, the payphone.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. The plot clincher of like every 1991 movie or something. there has to be a phone booth where you can make this call.
Movies and cell phones is interesting. I drive my wife crazy because I complain about movies where cell phones are a main component, a main character, basically, because the plots are all different. There's the suspense in the traditional pre-cell phone life or movie is gone.
Okay.
All the structure of the plot.
Right. You kind of have to manufacture that suspense now.
Well, and she's, right and annoyed that's how life is, so get over it.
Right.
But, exactly. But nonetheless, for those of us who are somewhat nostalgic for a pre-cell phone era and the kind of structure of conversation and life and exchange that precipitated.
Right, right.
That's something I noticed.
So part of the reason that you and I started doing that is I think you, Aaron, and I still had like a similar like frustration with the whole like phones and people changing plans and that sort of thing. Like that was one of the germs for me.
That was a big one for me too. For me also, like if I'm out doing something with somebody, I want to be out doing that thing with somebody. I don't want like even if like the other person on the other end thinks what they are about or what they are calling for is important, I still don't necessarily want to be interrupted by whatever it is.
Right.
Even if, we have this great ability to go like, okay, ignore that call, you know, and turn off the ring. The ringing in and of itself is annoying enough for me.
Right.
And so in my efforts to like stay present to whatever it is that I am doing, I grew up in a house that had just the landline for the longest time as well. And when we were out of the house, like the phone would just ring to an empty house. And
was there a cordless?
We did have cordless phones.
Okay. But, like a limited range around the house.
Yeah. I remember actually testing that many times, walking out into the yard or trying to go to the neighbor's house to see how long the signal would stay connected to the base.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, that was just how I operated was when you're out watching a movie or you're out to dinner, then you're out to dinner. You're not out to dinner with like half a foot out the door for the next call, or the next conversation.
That's tough. That bothers me too. It's kind of annoying to, like you guys were talking about, just always be available.
Yeah.
Like I don't want to have, I feel bombarded and with the smartphone it's even more just like, where do you find the balance of being available but not being driven by your phone?
Right.
It's supposed to be a tool.
Totally. Do you have an answer or are you kind of working that out?
I'm figuring it out. It's funny. After we talked, I got more into it. I got my Google calendar for the first time.
It's super useful, right?
Yeah. I'm at work. I have the calendar on my computer when I'm in front of the computer. And now it's like tied to my phone so I can see it. But then sometimes I'm like, oh, man, it's too much.
Yeah. Like the weight of that with you is like that's too much information to have access to all at once. Or
here's an answer, and I don't know if it's going to play out yet, but I've started this mental trick with myself where when I set my phone down at night, I think about that I only want things that help me be the person that I want to be come through that thing into my life.
Okay.
And I only want to put them out through it too.
Uh-huh.
And I think it's actually helping. I think, it cut my, I got caught in the Facebook thing. Geez, do I want to lose another hour of my life to that?
Right.
No, I'm,
Watching all these people that you kind of sort of
but
know.
But you're staying connected, right?
Then, yeah.
That's the thing that, I think that catches a lot of us. I don't have a Facebook account, right?
Right. You don't
so,
have
you don't?
Ruben.
So
I'm Ruben's
so
not Facebook.
It would be funny if you, for whatever reason, had a Facebook and yet like don't have a cell phone, you know. Yeah. But yeah, the whole like, but I need to stay connected to, you know, my family abroad and my friends abroad. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know. Like, do my friends really want to know every little minutia of my life?
Of course, you know? They do.
No, they don't.
They're your friends.
I mean, there are all these interesting distinctions to me because I am as addicted and fond of email as anybody, or perhaps more so.
Yeah.
So it's not that I wouldn't want to stay connected. It's just that the form of Facebook disgusts me. I have no interest in Facebook at all. But email, which may or may not be a big distinction to some people, but to me it's a big distinction.
It's enough of a distinction.
Yeah, that appeals to me immensely, and I've been doing it for, I don't know, 25 years.
Well, person-to-person messaging, as opposed to like a blast out into space of,
right,
look at me.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
Very well put. Very succinct.
I stole that from somebody, I think.
I can relate to the sentiment behind it, probably. It's just that the form it takes in Facebook or this is a cell phone mediated exchange.
Yeah.
It seems redundant in a way because I already have email and I like email.
If you want to talk to somebody, you send them a message and then they write you back.
Pacing seems fine to me. I mean, some people respond right away, some people don't, but it's stored there. And I suppose people can manage their phone that way too. But the annoying thing is you will call somebody, I will call somebody, and then it's a cell phone and I leave a message. The next thing I know, they call back and they say, hello, you called. And I realized they didn't listen to the message because
right.
It's complicated.
Yes.
No one listens to voices anymore.
Well, yeah. And so then you're back out, hung out to dry again. And it just seems all redundant and very tedious when it ostensibly was going to be immediate and simple.
Right.
And it doesn't, in my vicarious experience, seem to ever work out quite like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
The other thing that someone pointed out to me who really should be on the show is that the digital signal on a phone is actually quite different from an analog phone.
Uh-huh.
And that I didn't realize this until he pointed it out, but you talking with someone on a digital phone, you can't both talk at the same time.
It will
cut one out. And that seems like a really small, subtle point, but it isn't actually, because the way we have conversations, like you and I right now having a conversation, we cut in and out. But
that's a great example of it. Just here, you know.
but our voices, quite apart from any visual cues, our voices are overlapping.
Yeah.
In these really subtle ways. When you said, "Yeah, my voice didn't stop."
Let's say it together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's okay. all this, and when you stop and realize how a phone conversation where one person has a cell phone works, it doesn't. It's not like that at all. It's very choppy.
Right.
It cuts out whichever one of the two voices, and it's probably better when you don't know that, because when you know it starts to really be annoying.
Oh, sure. Well, I mean, it's part of the reason we don't do that many remote interviews. We used to like Skype people that were interesting, and there are still really interesting people to talk to on the internet, but look, we don't do audio shows with them anymore because like it's hard to have a conversation when you're next to somebody.
It takes a lot to do a Skype interview, especially because, I mean, with something here in the studio, I'm able to make eye contact. I'm able to, even though our listeners can't see body language, I'm able to read people's body language, and that sort of influences the things that we say and do with each other. Whereas in a Skype interview, even if we're able to do video, like I get this mm-hmm. head and shoulders square,
yeah,
no body language. I get some facial recognition.
I want to see people tapping their feet when they're impatient.
Sure, sure. Cleaning their nails when they're uninterested or whatever, you know.
Yeah. But
there's also things like signal delay, you know. There was something that kind of I remember noticing in our Skype conversation with Glenn.
Oh, yeah. You know, Glenn Kubishep and Yeg.
Great interview. And, you know, I don't think Glenn would, like, take this as personal.
Don't take it personally, Glenn.
Yeah, but it just there's a lot of unspoken communication lost in a Skype interview or in a remote interview that I think would influence, at least for me, it would influence, like, how I interact with him and how some of the questions and some of maybe the responses I would give. I know in that particular instance, I maybe didn't interact as much as I would if he were right here in the room.
Right. You know? Yeah, if he was right here in the room, we'd all be like, I don't know, probably bear hugging or something.
Yeah. That's good.
But, yeah. Well, I think I was thinking, too, about just the selective, in a certain point, I guess every method of communication is selective, because if you only have a home phone, you walk away from home, you're like, I'm okay with not being talked to for a while. But like Facebook, for example, like it could be a rabbit hole. I try to avoid it. I could say like at my peak, I probably spent like 3 hours on Facebook a day or something like that, which is a lot. Yeah. I think these days I get, if someone tries to contact me through that, I have it redirected to my email. So like, I don't really have to log into Facebook that often if I don't want to. Mm-hmm. And for the past month or so, past 2 months, I feel like maybe even longer than that, I just haven't been like logging in. Like I'm there if someone talks to me, if they're like, hey, here's a thing. If someone like, I don't know, reaches out in some digital way. But it's also like I really don't want to spend that much time just like browsing around in other people's lives. So
no way.
Is that what you were thinking of?
Well, that and a little bit of something else. There's something about the photo communication that I really like.
Yeah.
Like being able to send an image or share an image. I mean, that's an image is a million words, right? 1,000 words, something. It's a lot. It talks to a different part of the brain, I think. I mean, I don't really know, but I like it.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's part of the allure that would bring me into it. But then I was just thinking about this a little bit ago today. I think part of it is with that and all the other apps, you know, and the smartphone in general, like, you know, we're creatures that like to be connected, and it's talking to this part of that piece of our psyche. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like, so, you know, sometimes I have a work day where I'm not talking to people and I'm like craving that interaction. So I'll look at the phone real quick. I'm like, oh man, I'm tired of looking at the phone. That's not the interaction that I really want, but it's there. It's sure. Right there in your pocket.
It's like
devious.
Empty calories from like Cheetos or something.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm hungry, so I ate a bag of Cheetos. I'm still hungry.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm like 800 calories full or something like that. And none of them are calories that are going to make me feel good or something like that. Yeah. It's like you're looking for something social, and social media isn't actually social. So you're like, you're reaching out two people, but you're like behind this glass screen or cage or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I think was it the glass cage? There's this this book that somebody wrote that I haven't read yet about computers and things. I'm not going to speak from ignorance about it, but I think it was the same guy that wrote the Gutenberg Elegy. No, he was a smart guy that wrote a book about a thing. So, anyways, that was.
I was just going to say there's also a collective dimension. We're talking about it as an individual choice, you know,
yeah.
To opt in, opt out, you know, and that's all something I can very much relate to. But there's also this collective dimension where there is a convention. There have always been conventions about how to interact verbally, audio interaction. And we got rid of our answering machine for a year.
Really?
Because of electricity. I was on this kick of trying to figure out how to use as little electricity as possible.
Uh-huh.
That was representing, you know, 15% of our electricity. So I said, we don't really need it. Let's just unplug it and have the answering machine. And we thought it was fine because, you know, you can call back, right?
Yeah.
But after our experiment was over, my mother-in-law let it be known that she was kind of put out, that really hadn't been so cool. And she didn't quite say it in a way that I had registered while we were doing the experiment. But afterwards, it was, you know, something she said, basically, it's good that you have it back because. And I realized
now I can leave you messages.
Yeah. Well, and that we had also, I think, violated an expectation of longstanding. If we go back 100 years, in certain levels of society, you visited somebody. If they weren't there, you left a calling card.
Oh, right.
Which I think has some parallels to the answering machine. You weren't just shown the door. You had a way, a sort of culturally arranged, agreed upon way to register your presence.
Like the butler never said, they're not here, go away.
Yeah. And I think the answering machine in some ways is an heir to that. And
okay.
We probably have many more now. I don't even know if people have answering machines anymore. But there's a history here of the kinds of interactions that are deemed appropriate and not appropriate. And I'm sure I'm violating them all the time by not having a cell phone or not doing Facebook or whatever. And
yeah.
I feel it on some level, but there's also levels in which I'm sure I'm not feeling it. So I think that's, for me at least, another dimension of this whole thing that's interesting to think about.
Yeah, for sure. Is that as far as, I don't know, you mentioned like it affects other people. Like how far out do you think should we be willing to step? Like say the answering machine as an example, like it seems like you thought that was reasonable. Like it's okay for your mother-in-law to call you.
For me, it's always an experiment. I mean, everything's an experiment.
Right. Kind of flexible boundaries.
But, yeah, to try and see what happens. And I didn't know that it would violate this principle until much later that I sort of dawned on me in that way. But I don't know. I get annoyed with people who don't answer emails. Uh-huh. To me, and they people probably get annoyed with me for not having a phone and not being reachable in the way that they think I should be, et cetera.
They should email
so
you.
So I think we've created for ourselves all these many, 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 many overlapping modes of communication, mm-hmm. and perhaps there are sets of expectations that go with each one that we also are maybe unwittingly violating. I don't know, but I know that when I email with somebody and then I learn that they've been on Facebook all day, I think, huh, well, okay, I guess I'm just not gonna get an email, and then I never do.
Right
And it's, I think there's probably those expectations exist all over the place about how these things are supposed to be used and how people are supposed to interact with them, and maybe they don't.
Well, I think it's participatory. I mean, we're kind of it's new stuff. We're deciding how we want it to play out, and it does have some far-reaching effects in our society that we, you know, that some we're aware of and some we're not. Like, I think it's, well, I'm not sure. I should have done research, but I think it can be shown that the texting and the stuff with the cell phones has made a lower attention span.
Oh, yeah.
It seems to be the case. I mean, there's a lot of things that have been driving at that for a while.
Right.
Where our attention is being frittered away towards various things. And, yeah, mm-hmm. it's hard to get people to sit in one place for any one purpose for any long length of time.
And that's, you know, the instant message isn't helping with that.
Right.
And I have a hard time with that. I want to sit down and write an email on the message because it's like I want to put my whole thought in there.
Right.
I have not gotten the hang of the five-word text.
Right. Are you like, you want to like write like a book and somebody responds with like the letter K?
Well, we haven't, interestingly, we're, I don't know, 45 minutes into this and no one has even yet mentioned a letter.
Right.
Mm. Writing a letter.
Yeah.
Which, of course, once
what
upon a time.
What the fuck are those?
which, you know, predated a lot of this.
Yeah.
Almost all of what we've been talking about.
Right, right. And letters were like inherently long form.
Yeah,
even postcards.
And there are, I know people to this day who lament, who insist on writing letters and who hold that tradition very dear and who put a lot of effort into it and think probably like I think about the telephone, that it was a loss that people no longer do that.
Right, you know? Right. And we're looking at like the conversation or whatever on the phone and saying that's a loss now that people are doing something else.
Right.
So
I think there's a longer trends here of all of what we're talking about.
Right, right.
And there's, of course, there's the dependency. I talked briefly about being a cheapskate, but there's also this dependency of the damn thing is obsolescent before you even have it.
True.
It may break. I've heard people complain about the expense of the plan that you have to buy and you get stuck in, and if you lose the phone then you can't get out of the plan, or I don't know how it all works, but there's a lot of dependency and money involved in maintaining this and keeping up with it and so on.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it sounds like obviously you've been thinking about this for a while, Ruben. You said it's a continuing experiment. Brad, you said you're kind of new at the cell phone thing, or at least the smartphone thing.
Right.
But from both of you, I'm curious, what would you tell people who are interested in doing less? Like, what would you recommend to people?
Well, probably from this guy, because
doing less. You mean in terms of communication?
Sure. Like if they feel like they're like way in over their heads on, like they're stuck on Facebook or they're, you know.
What's astonishing to me? I have two good friends who had cell phones and got rid of them.
Uh-huh.
To me, that seems way more difficult to imagine pulling off than just never getting one in the first place, because you don't become habituated to it, and then it's not hard to extricate yourself because you never had one. But
it's,
I know,
like
two people
liking beer and then not drinking beer.
Yeah, exactly. It's still September, isn't it?
Yeah.
So to me, the fact that these two people, who are every bit as connected, my generation, you know, who they're not hermits, they don't live in the woods, they interact, they're, you know, have businesses, they work downtown. I mean, they have a life like most of us probably, or as connected as all of us. but they somehow managed to extricate themselves and were very, I think, very happy to not have that cell phone.
Yeah.
So there's that pathway, which seems also available. It's not, one doesn't hear about it very much. But yeah, I don't know. I guess I can't give advice to people about extricating themselles because I'd skip
never
that.
Never mentioned.
You have nothing to extricate from.
No, yeah. No. But I can say that it works, and it's it. The only tedious part for me really is the extra time it takes when you talk to people who don't know you, who automatically assume you have one.
Yeah.
That you then need to go through certain extra steps that we all used to go through. But they've lost that sense, and it sometimes it brings up, you know, humorous conversations where they are genuinely curious. Well, why the hell don't you have this thing? And
right.
how does this work? And there's, yeah. Anyway, so
yeah.
I can't offer advice specifically except to say that I don't miss it and wouldn't want one, and I'm very happy to not have one.
Okay, so it's not the hell that someone might imagine then.
Yeah, no, not at all.
Okay, right.
You don't feel disconnected.
Like I said before, I mean, people call me and they say, why is it that I can always reach you? You don't even have a cell phone. So, I mean, I'm home a lot. I work from home, and so I do have a phone, and I like to answer the phone.
Yeah.
I like to be connected, and I guess email is probably my default. I do prefer that.
Okay, yeah. Well, maybe, Brad, if you're still kind of in process, what are some things that you've decided you're going to keep about the smartphone experience, and what are some things you could do without?
Okay, well...
That was a beautiful ringtone, by the way.
Well-timed.
So, you know, I'm thinking that I want to... Well, first of all, I haven't utilized so many parts of what the cell phone can do, the smartphone can do, and I'm fine with that. I think I'm interested in finding what really suits me in it and not... And taking away the things that don't.
Okay.
You know, and I'm not interested in getting rid of my cell phone. But I am interested in using it as a tool rather than have it be my boss.
Right.
And I am, and I think even using it as a tool, I'm interested in exploring, doing life through personal interactions. So like. The goods that I use in my life, I want to come from people that I know or from people that they know or at least people that are in the region and that kind of thing. And I think I'm going to do the same thing with the phone. Just like what really connects me, I'll keep it. And what is the outer space that I, you know, like you mentioned when you put the Facebook out there and it's like all this stuff, you know, maybe I don't need that kind of outer space. Maybe I need a world full of real people to bounce. Yeah. Or, you know,
rise
off of.
Right, yeah. And it seems like that should come before the virtual people or whatever.
Yes.
And it's not, I mean, they're all real people, but it's mm-hmm. like the people that you see
well, you
in
could
the
say
physical world.
Yeah, you could say they're all real people, but they're virtual connections.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I for one will advocate for everybody to sort of shrink their world down as far as socially speaking,
yeah.
Our brains are only wired to make so many intimate connections and to see only so many people as like friends, as like intimate.
And I thought it was something like friends. 40. Like
it's
a fairly
a lot
low
smaller
number.
Than you think. Yeah,
yeah.
Than
yeah.
your
yeah.
Facebook friends.
Yeah,
right,
yeah,
totally.
Yeah. And so, but there's also that sort of like vanity side of you that. Looks at the Facebook stats and is like, yeah, I've got 1,000 friends and like,
yeah.
you know,
and
you feel good about
that. Tons of people
that.
Like this
yeah.
thing that I put up
right.
on the internet.
Look at all these thumbs up I've
yeah.
got.
Yeah.
But yeah, that feeds a certain part of your brain, but it doesn't take very long, I think, especially once you extricate yourself from that. By the way, that's going to be one of my favorite words, and I think it's
extricate
yeah,
yourself.
I think we've used that more this episode than any other episode combined.
I think we should put that after a pound sign.
Extricate. But anyways, yeah, you realize like it's not feeding you very much, and it I think it also starves the intimate connections that you have.
Virtual Cheetos.
Yeah,
there's a really to me nifty movie I've seen twice. I think it was. I might have this wrong, but I think there were Carleton College students who, for their senior project in college, made a movie of themselves in the last, I think it was the last month and a half of their year extricating themselves from all computing, from computer, from the library computer, from Facebook, from all these things that this is in the mid-2000s.
Yeah.
And it's a fairly short movie. It's really well done. And, they were going to college much after I did. And even though we had email, that was about it. There wasn't internet when I went to college. And
sure.
There wasn't all this other stuff. And the movie is surprisingly well done in terms of giving you a very palpable sense of what it was like even 10 years ago to try to extricate yourself. And the resistance from everybody, their friends, the administration, the teachers, because at that point even all the classes were online and their papers and they had to submit them and they tried to learn how to use a typewriter. And it's humorous, but it's also just super insightful as to how difficult it was to do that.
Totally.
So I'll get the title and email it to you.
Sounds good.
It's a really good movie.
Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, I think there's something to be said for, judicious use. That's like what we talk about with bicycles and combustion engines, too, most times on the show. It's just both have their place. Both are useful. We live in a world with modern conveniences. But, when does the convenience, like you were saying, Brad, when does that, start running you instead of you using it? Mm-hmm. So I think that's kind of the main thing. And, again, everybody has to find their own place where that is the case for them.
Sure.
So, yeah. But ignore it. Get used to ignoring your machine.
Well, and shrink your world.
Yeah.
I really like that term, shrink your world. You said we only have the synapses or whatever to make so many connections. We should have those connections in our life instead of being stuck in a vacuum of outer space where we're bombarded with all this information, but none of it's personal.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And even when it comes to just transporting yourself, from point A to point B, there's something I think that it feeds the brain a little bit more when you're doing it slower, when you're going less miles over a longer period of time. And I love a good car trip more than anybody. I mean, that's how I got here was, this week-long car trip from Michigan all the way over here, and it was great, and I won't trade that experience for anything. But in the meantime, having shrunk down to, bicycle scale, for example, going from here to, I don't know, just even to Stubbs Stewart, which is, I don't know, a 4-hour bike from
50 miles,
the Hillsboro Transit Station.
Oh, from there it's 20.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So anyways, even that little bit still I have that week long experience. That those sort of same emotions and those same whatever chemicals are fired off in the brain over a longer period of time, but also over shorter mileage, And it's just, it's interesting the whole theory of shrinking down your scale and shrinking down your world and how much that, and at least in my experience, has fed my emotional side or my spiritual side.
Yeah.
Would you call that human scale?
Probably, if I was more savvy, probably.
Human scale life.
Human scale, yeah.
Totally.
There's another link to transportation that's kind of interesting, and maybe this you've had a show on this, I don't know, but there is, I think, quite a bit of research now out to suggest that one of the reasons that per capita driving is down a lot is because younger people, it would seem, among other things, are using social media instead of cars.
Yeah.
Cars no longer fill a social need that they did a generation ago.
You're no longer going to the hop to get the shakes and the
right. And it
the
and
sock hop.
As somebody who has neither a car nor a cell phone, I can't speak to this at any length. But it seems statistically like people are, for better or worse, using social media and cell phones instead of cars in a non-trivial sense.
Yeah, and to get bus schedules if they have to go somewhere. really, that is kind of the thing.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I love that trend. That's fantastic. Right. Yeah. Maybe just the last thing. I unfriended a bunch of people on Facebook because I was like, you know what?
You're not my friends.
Well, basically, I never see you.
Yeah.
I probably won't see you again, or something like that. I was like, we don't need to stay connected.
Right.
If we did, we'd have postcards.
This connection is superfluous.
Yeah, yeah. So, consider it. And all you people out there, if you're listening to me, you know, if you didn't make the cut and we are actually friends, I apologize.
In a way, this kind of reminds
me. Send
me
a postcard.
This was somewhat parodied in a South Park episode ages ago when Facebook was like starting to gain some traction and Stan was a little resistant to it, and then he finally gets a Facebook page and his dad is like, "So, I see you haven't friended me yet on Facebook. Does that mean we're not friends?" It's like, no, I just haven't got around to it. I see you every day. I don't see the reason why I have to friend you on Facebook. It's like, well, so we're not friends then.
There was the time when parents started getting MySpace profiles and all the kids moved to the next platform.
Right.
And there was the time when like Facebook became the thing where all the parents were, and then all the kids migrated to somewhere else again. Yeah. Basically, wherever they could put up pictures of their genitalia or whatever without being seen by their parents. So, yeah, there is the great migration. Gentlemen, thank you for coming, and I appreciate your thoughts. Thank you for taking this so much more seriously than I feel like I should have probably buckled down, and yeah, I apologize. But thank you for being here. Can you hang out with us as we go through our mail?
Sure, absolutely.
Awesome. All right.
Apologies today with no headlines, but... You know what we do have?
What do we got?
What have we got?
We got mail. Hey, we got mail.
We got email.
We got mail of various varieties. First up, John Gardner found something in his email, and it says, "Scroll down. Team Sincerity for the win. Are you involved in Bike Scout? Or is this just a random VeloCult photo?"
And he found the picture for Bike Scout this year, which included us from last year.
Yeah, so it was an advertisement for Bike Scout.
Yeah. And you know how we knew it was from last year is because Everett was in the picture. Elder Everett wasn't able to join us this year. We missed him. Yeah.
But I carried your name badge.
Yeah, we carried his name badge along.
Yeah.
Which is good. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Thanks for finding that, John.
Next up, Chris in Denver says, "Dear Brock and Aaron, thank you so much for your interview with Todd.
Todd the truck driver.
I used to work in the trucking industry for many years and got tired of defending drivers against the haters. In 30 minutes, you put a positive face on a profession that benefits everyone. I wish Todd well and appreciate he is safety oriented. He also seems like a guy to have a beer with."
He does seem like a guy to have a beer with.
"Feel free to pass on my info, and if he's in Denver Metro and is looking to hang, would be happy to."
Yeah.
"P.S. I graduated from PSU. Good luck to the young lady, Sydney."
Yeah.
Carry on.
And they're in touch, so they probably will have a beer together someday.
So I was thinking this is something that has been happening fairly recently. Is people who write into our show are now writing each other.
That's cool. Yeah, personally.
Is the Sprocket Podcast the new Facebook?
I think we are. Yeah, totally.
The hub
yes.
of digital communication.
That's right.
Yeah, we need a giant data center, and we need somebody to make a movie about me. And then we need, what else do we need Facebook-wise? We need a logo that's blue.
But this will only work until our parents show up. Right?
That's right. And then I'll have to go and show my genitalia to somebody else. So, yes.
I can't believe you said
that. I realized I was running the risk of that.
Next up, we got some comments from that episode with Todd, episode 257B. Josh G shares with us a video. He says, "Who is the king of
I-205?
I-105? Oh, I-105. Thank you.
So that's not here. That's somewhere else.
Yeah. Best to go to settings and watch this at 1/4 of speed. Was it a tall bike or a black helicopter? And have you seen this video yet?
I saw some stills from it. I haven't seen the entire thing. Yeah. I thought it was a tall black helicopter.
It's really hard to see what it is, actually. But
allegedly it's like this guy that was just riding his tall bike on the freeway?
I guess so.
Okay.
I can't find any connecting story to it. There's that video. There's like one comment that says something to the effect of like, you know, it's an advertisement basically on the comment. Like, let us use your video for whatever thing. There's like zero context for this at all.
For a company selling black helicopters?
Maybe. Okay. Maybe that's what
I wonder if Todd could fit a tall bike into his truck.
Oh, I bet. Well, at least in the trailer. Yeah, really? I'm not sure how tall the cab is, though. That's a good question.
No, he could probably stick it behind the cab.
Yeah, it's true. It would just be out in the elements.
Yeah.
Yeah. He can put his own small bike into the cab and keep it sheltered from the elements, which was, yeah, that was the problem with the grocery getter before, is that it was out in the cold and the wet, and yeah, I'm sure he probably had to replace the chain every time he took it out or something, but now it's safe.
You know, that was fun, really, hearing you guys talk about that, because I was picturing how he was going to put a bike stand in his truck.
Yeah, yeah.
That came off pretty well.
It took out the seat, and there it is. Yeah, now I still have yet to see it in person, because he always parks really close to where I work. So next time he's in town, I have to actually go see the truck.
I'm looking at this video again, and it's just it's just a big blur.
Okay. Well, the king of I-105.
There it goes. Where is 105 anyways?
You know what? We should recreate this
westbound
tonight.
On the 105 West Freeway. Yeah. That's all it says.
I know there's a 105 in Eugene, Oregon. I wonder, but it goes north-south, I think. Anyways, I'm going to take a video of you on Division as we ride away tonight, and we can post that in response to this.
There you go.
And we'll be like, you know, who was it a regular bike or a regular helicopter? Or was it the King of Division?
It was the King of Division.
Can I ask either of you, if you were, in fact, royalty in charge of a certain street, what would you be? Because I would be, I think I decided I would be the Dean of Duke Street. Because I live close to it. And Duke Street's not as important as Division, so I think I'd be the Dean. It's kind of sort of royal. More academic, I guess.
Sure. What rhymes with Powell?
Powell. I think we're trying to figure this out.
Yeah, you could say the Prince of Powell.
Oh, wow. There we go. So that's you?
I'm the only one brave enough to ride my bike up it.
There we go. Okay.
Hey.
That is pretty brave.
It is.
I'll up you a Foster.
Ooh.
Oh, there you go. There you go.
But what's your royalty title?
Yeah, I don't know. I was stumped. He put that
fresh
on the glove.
Of Foster.
That's right. Oh, that's awesome.
Child of Foster.
The child of Foster?
I don't know. Foster
child.
Foster child. All right. Yeah.
Yeah, so lastly.
I like Foster.
Peanut Butter Jar Matt weighs in on why Subway sandwiches, why their bread tastes a little off.
Yeah, we mentioned this recently, right?
Perhaps this was the reason, and he links us to an article, and it has such a great title.
Yeah. There.
Subway removes yoga mat ingredient from its bread.
What? So one of the ingredients of Subway's bread was like this plastic particle that is found in yoga mats.
This additive
That's
puts,
why it doesn't, like... That's why it still looks like bread.
That's
like,
why it looks like it raised.
Later.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
My gosh.
Yeah.
And apparently they changed the formulation once this became public. But, of course, not until it became public.
Oh, well, yeah.
Yeah. But apparently that was, like, what gave it its loft. So.
Yeah, yeah. So what that chemical does, I guess, is it causes the little bubbles in yoga mats to form.
Uh-huh.
And keeps it springy.
It also causes
and
little
so
bubbles
does,
to form in the
so
bread.
So it does that for bread, too.
Yeah, Subway. But again, it's the shittiest bread you've ever had. And it seems like the flavor is good, but there's something about
there's
Subway
something
after
off.
You've eaten Subway that's gross. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's the yoga mat particles.
It's the taste of sock.
Yes. Seriously. So anyway, well, thank you. Thank you, Matt. We appreciate that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, it's been a good show. We should probably wrap this up. Do you guys have anything else you needed to kick in before we shut this thing down?
I'm hungry. I'm going to Subway.
Okay.
All this talk about bread.
You should get the Atkins version of that sandwich. The one without the bread.
Oh,
for anybody
what,
who doesn't remember the Atkins diet. Yeah. I never tried it.
All right. So you ready to do this?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Our website is thesprocketpodcast.com.
Email thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com.
Call or text to 503-847-9774.
Twitter @sprocketpodcast.
I thought we weren't doing voices. Thanks to Ryan J. Lane for our theme music.
Hearthbird for our headline sounder.
Marcus Norman for graphic design.
And thanks to our sustaining donors, Logan Smith, Johnny K., Shadowfoot,
Katrina Mellengard, Wayne Norman, Doug Robertson,
Ethan Georgie, Justin Martin, Eric Iverson,
Cameron Lead, Richard Wazinski, Tim Mooney,
Orange and Purple, Glenn Kubish, Matt Kelly.
Jim Gooden, Eric Wise, Doug Cohen Miller,
Todd Parker, Scott McAllister Morgan, Chris Gonzalez,
Dan Gebhardt, Zoe Campagna, John Blood,
Allison Wiley, Andy Brunner, Dave Nose,
Chris V. Lars V. Chris Smith, Christy Kaster,
Caleb Jackinson, JP Cooley, Peanut Butter Jar Matt,
Patrick Archain, Gabriel Trainer, Sebastian Poole,
Marco Lowe, Rich Otterstrom, Andrew Alderson,
Drew the Welder, Anna, Christus Kukis,
John Wasserman, Andre Johnson, Shelley and Troy,
King of Division, John Zissen, and Richard G.
I am a vampire.
Good night, everyone. Brush your teeth.
Go to bed.
Yeah, I was just looking around.
We got a lot of it. It's built into the fabric of our...
my cell phone.
Yeah. Wait, this...
Oh, that's...
It's a flashlight?
That's really cool.
This is a bike light.
Oh, right. But it looks like it could be a cell phone. Oh, but it's just...
an electronic device. Yes.
It could be, yeah. It's...
It's just a flashlight built into the like the
old cat eye.
Exactly.
So it's mountable on your bike.
I was admiring that. Yeah.
I didn't look at it closely till just now.
I felt like I needed to hold on to something, that you all have something phallic in your hand. I needed to grab something.
I think that looks like appropriate technology right there.
Right, right.
I thought so.